Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jonah Carey.
Oh, great to see you.
Me too. I don't know who you are, but it's great to see you.
The Athletic and the Jonah Carey Podcast.
He's thrown his pillow. He's thrown his nightcap. And Yuppie's been thrown out of the ball game.
Tim Raines, enthusiast.
Tim Raines.
Yeah!
Welcome to the Hall of Fame. Tim was rock solid playing.
Is that right, what?
Jonah Carey with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Jonah Carey of The Athletic is on Twitter at Jonah Carey. Sportsnet, the opener podcast, you name it, he does it. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Happy Friday, Jonah. How are you?
Great. How are you guys?
Not as good as Vlad Guerrero Jr. having hit his three-run homer. Was it last night? Welcome back, Vladito. What are we doing, like a week until he's up with the Blue Jays? How long do I have to wait?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good sign. He's got an oblique injury, which we're going to assume was not manufactured for the sake of optics and suppressing his service time.
It actually was an oblique injury that was an oblique injury.
Very well done. It was good to see, and he's just got such a majestic swing, guys. It was just a beauty of a shot that's pretty much straight down the line in left field. And listen, he's a talent, and Brandon Drury, not for nothing, 20 strikeouts so far. He's got a strike. He's rocking a strikeout rate over 40%. That's the highest in the American League. He's the current third baseman for the Blue Jays. So it's not just that you're getting this great player. The guy who's going to be replacing, and I wrote about it at Sportsnet today, has been brutally, brutally bad. One of the biggest upgrades I think any team could make at any position the minute that it happens.
So I was wondering this, Jonah, as we saw the news of the Ozzie Albies extension come across. It's not a great one as it goes to labor negotiations, but Vlad Guerrero Jr. comes from a wealthy family. His father was a major league player. He doesn't have the same pressures as other guys do to take this kind of financial security. Is it fair to wonder whether Vlad Guerrero Jr. is going to be the next free agent to hit 26 and be on the marketplace perhaps and not sign an extension like this?
Yeah, I sort of pontificated on this a little bit in the podcast today with it's called The Opener at The Athletic, and people should subscribe to The Athletic and listen to The Opener with Ken Rosenthal. And we were talking about not only Vlad Jr., but although he's not quite as good a prospect, still very good, as Bo Bichette.
Right.
Of course, Bo Bichette comes from the Bichette family. They made lots of money, too, in baseball. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. Now, relationships with fathers and sons can be complicated, and money and whatever. And it's not like Dante Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Sr. are old. You know, they're in their 40s, so or maybe Bichette might be 50 by now. So, yeah, it's one of those things where it's hard to say, but by the same token, they do have at least some financial security, presumably. So I would think that that could change the equation a little bit. But, you know, by the same token, some people want to be their own man and make their own money, and I understand that too. So I think it'll be interesting to see, but I do think the circumstances are different than Albies and Acuna. Acuna signed for $100,000. He had no security. His dad never made it to the big leagues, even though he was a pretty good ball player. Albies was the same kind of thing. Wasn't a huge signing bonus. He wanted to play with Acuna. It's his best buddy. He comes from a background where he wasn't necessarily wealthy. By the way, I should say that background could apply if you're from Iowa, too. It's not necessarily Venezuela-specific. But it just creates a confluence where all of that, maybe family members putting pressure on you, what have you, could be all kinds of reasons, can lead to below-market extensions. Ozzie Albies will never be wanting for anything in his life at this point because that's enough money to take care of him and his kids and grandkids and all that good stuff. But you're right, from a labor standpoint, it really is the case that teams have kind of a united front here. They just want to suppress wages as much as possible, whereas players have all kinds of factors floating around in their head, which could lead to them to sign a contract like that or not. And we can sit here and fault them, but they still are entitled to make the choice that they want to make.
The Mariners are an early story at 13-2, and they are being led by a former Cub farmhand named Dan Vogelbach.
Large adult son.
This is a slash line, 400-513, 1.113. It's an OPS of 1.646, an OPS plus of 344. What are we seeing in this mountainous man?
It's just a shame that Kyle Schwarber lost that weight, because you could have gone Spider-Man meme on these two guys. They're the same player, right? I mean, they're big and kind of burly, and or at least Schwarber was in the past, and really good, you know, when they're on their game. And Vogelbach has struggled, you know, at times where he's been somebody who can draw a walk and he's got a lot of power when he connects, but he's struggled to really square up the ball, at least in the major leagues. He was doing it in the minors and finally seems to have taken the next step. And, you know, 26 years old, it's a good age for it. There have been a lot of guys, it seems like, early in the season. Dansby Swanson comes to mind. A lot of these players who were really highly touted and for one reason or another didn't break through and are off to really nice starts. I think we can throw our friend Yoan Moncada in that batch as well. And, you know, from Vogelbach's perspective, it really is a matter of just controlling the strike zone. And it's something that team has done very well overall. Domingo Santana is doing it. Of course, the veterans like Encarnacion and Jay Bruce are doing it. It really is something to watch. That's why this offense has been so good. It's the highest scoring offense in all of baseball. And they've hit a home run in each of their first 15 games. Really, really something to watch this Mariners team.
The Mitch Haniger acquisition is the one that stands out to me when I look at Seattle. As much as Jerry DePoto has tried to remake and trade everyone he can possibly find, Haniger is the guy, is the keystone to that offensive approach, at least for my money.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been tremendous. And you look at it, and he's the one keeper. You know, I did a story on the Mariners for The Athletic, and I talked to Justin Hollander, the assistant general manager, and I've had conversations with Justin in the past, and he's talked about Haniger extensively. And if you look at what they did this offseason, we're talking about all the guys that they have, but of course, Cano's gone, Diaz is gone, Gamel's gone, Colomé is gone, Segura's gone. You go on and on and on. Just a bunch of players who are not there anymore. And he said with Haniger, you know, it was a different kind of player. That he's 28. He's not exceptionally young, but he's in baseball terms, he hasn't been around that long. He's got 4 years of controllable service time, and he's really, really good. He's just got a pure swing, looks excellent, and has a chance to really stick for them. So it's an interesting strategy to really try to build around a player who's not 21 or 22 years old necessarily, but the Mariners didn't view this as a total teardown. They didn't see it as, you know, the Astros where they're going to lose 106-plus games 3 years in a row and have 0.0 local TV ratings and just be a disaster. They said, we think we can reload pretty quickly. We're going to get some players who can at least keep us competitive. We'll build around Haniger and we'll go from there. And Marco Gonzalez is the other guy they wanted to build around. And so far, so good. You know, it's been working for them. They're obviously ahead of schedule, playing this well. But look, it's the team with the longest playoff drought in all of baseball. Wouldn't it be something if after trading away half the roster, that's the year they get into the postseason? That would be quite remarkable.
Connor asked this question yesterday, Jonah, and I think it's a good one. As we watch Ronaldo Lopez of the White Sox struggle, waiting to see if Lucas Giolito is the guy he was in his second appearance or the guy he was in his third appearance. Big start today for him. But knowing the Dane Dunning going under the knife, Michael Kopech is recovering as well. Carlos Rodon, still we're not 100% certain. Yeah. Where are we on sort of the teetering edge of this phase of rebuild stalling out early if the pitching fails across the board?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a matter of how patient do you want to be, right? If the White Sox had gotten Machado, maybe we'd be having a different conversation. But there wasn't a great expectation once Machado didn't happen and their big, you know, hauls were what? Alonso and John Jay said, okay, the White Sox have to win this season. So I think that you roll with it longer. I think that the answer to your question is not yet, basically. And you kind of wait and see what happens this season because Rodon and Lopez and Giolito and all these guys have a chance to be better. And, of course, yeah, Kopech's got the injury, but there's no reason to expect that he's permanently damaged or anything like that. He should be able to come back. So I think the rubber hits the road, you know, maybe next season. This year is still a test. And then you make decisions this winter, and then you go into next season and you decide. If Giolito puts up a 7 ERA or something like that, then, yeah, I think you have to ask serious questions about whether he's a part of your future. But if he shows glimpses, if we see him have one good start and one bad start, that's probably good enough that you run it back in 2020, and he's in that rotation. Same deal with Lopez, same deal with Rodon.
The Padres have gotten off to a pretty decent start. I find Chris Paddock very fun to watch. I kind of like Matt Strom a little bit, too, and that's not gone so well for me. Are they, do you believe them in as much as they'll add something, they'll supplement this roster as it's constructed if they taste a little bit of possibility to win the NL West?
Yeah, I mean, I did my preseason predictions and I really was agonizing over the Padres. I really wanted to pick them for the postseason, and it just came down to the NL East has too many good teams. I had to leave the Braves out too. I felt that three teams would get in from the East. Yes. That would leave the Padres out. But, you know, being the sixth best team in a league that has, what, 8 or 9 good clubs, maybe 10, is not any shame at all, and it means that you could be on the precipice. So, yeah, there's definitely a possibility here for the Padres. And you wonder if just the two guys who are sitting out there, you know, could be part of it. I don't know about Kimbrel because the bullpen's not too bad, but maybe Dallas Keuchel is the guy because it's not, you know, obviously it'd be great if the Padres could get a true ace, but I think fundamentally what they could really use as well is somebody who's just pretty good and can eat innings because they've got three pitchers who skipped AAA and made their major league debuts this year in the starting rotation, which is fine, but you can't run those guys out for 32 starts and expect everything to be hunky-dory. I think that's asking a lot. So if you get a Keuchel, it allows you to back off. It allows you to go to six-man. It allows you to skip starts, you know, phantom injured list guys you can do. You can send guys down to the minors if you need to. You can manage all this so that Paddock and Strom and Marge Vicious, which is a terrific name, all of these guys have the possibility of, you know, kind of easing into it a little bit more. But they are talented, especially Paddock. That Chris Paddock changeup, if you have not seen Chris Paddock pitch and you've got the MLB, you know, TV subscription or extra innings or whatever, dial up Paddock and just watch for his changeup. And if you're somebody who doesn't necessarily identify pitches all that well, trust me, you'll know which pitch is the changeup because it's the one that does crazy, crazy things.
Yeah, I think, you know, Saris wrote about it the other day, too, of just that pitch and appreciating that. What the hell are the Indians doing to be 8-4? Because we looked at their lineup, and it was hilarious. Like, there were smell lines coming off of the television screen, and now they're getting the performance from Leonis Martin, and obviously the pitching is there. I laughed when I saw their lineup, and I'm not laughing anymore.
You know, I hate to tell you this, but one person you have to laugh at, too, is Jose Ramirez. I read a stat the other day. Jose Ramirez, in his last 50 games going back to last season, his OPS is about 450.
Whoa.
That's a third of a season. That's not that small a sample size anymore. That's starting to get a little bit worrisome and just make you wonder what we're dealing with Ramirez, which hitter is. I don't think he's that bad, obviously. But there's a little bit of concern that maybe he's not the MVP caliber player that we saw, you know, in the larger sample. And, yeah, it is a concern. You know, you've got all kinds of weird players hitting in the middle of the order. You know, Jake Bowers is going to be the catalyst, and Leonis Martin is going to be the catalyst. And it's been a testament to their starting pitching. And it's without Mike Clevinger, who at least recently in the last few days, because Clevinger, along with DeGrom, they were the only two guys with 20-plus strikeouts and no runs allowed in their first two starts. That's really good. Clevinger, you know, emerging as a real ace, and now he's out for 2-plus months too. But that rotation is so deep that they still can run out Kluber and Bauer and Carrasco and Shane Bieber, who's really good. So, I mean, that's largely your answer. They can suppress runs at the beginning of the game. Bullpen's fine, good enough. And they're just finding a way to win. They're not scoring all that many runs, but they've been opportune in when they score runs, and it's good enough to support that pitching staff.
I'm going to take advantage of a small sample size here, but I don't mean to do it in such an aggressive way. What percent chance would you give that Zach Eflin is actually the better pitcher than Aaron Nola for the Phillies going forward?
It's possible. Eflin had a bit of a prospect pedigree himself. I mean, he was acquired in a deal and you know, didn't come out of nowhere by any means, and I liked him. In fact, I was doing my breakout picks for this season, and I had a whole bunch of guys. I think I might have picked Byron Buxton for the 40th year in a row, whatever.
Yeah.
But I picked all three of the Phillies pitchers at the bottom of the rotation. That is not Nola, not Arrieta. Now, I don't know about Vince Velasquez. We'll see. It may not happen. And Nick Pivetta was everybody's favorite sleeper, so that's maybe not that much of a pick. And he's been crap anyway, so we can't really say that much about it. But Eflin has been on. I mean, you look at it, and I think there's a few factors. Number one is his own coming of age. He's been able to improve. But number two is you cannot discount what you've got around you. And the Phillies defense, I cannot say emphatically enough, was horrible last year. Horrible. I mean, they just had black holes at every position. And it's not to say that Andrelton Simmons plays every position now, but they have competent, capable major leaguers now. Andrew McCutchen is a fair bit better than what they had in the corner last year. Harper is not great, but he's not any worse than what they had last year. Shortstop is upgraded this season big time by having Segura there. So Real Muto is a better defensive catcher than what they had last year. So they've got a bunch of guys who not only can make an impact offensively, but can stabilize that defense. And, you know, I think no matter how much we talk about pitching and defense being intertwined, sometimes it sneaks up on us in unexpected ways. Like, you're in a fantasy league and you draft Zach Eflin and you don't expect his ERA to drop by two runs or whatever because the defense is way, way better than it was last year, but that stuff can happen.
Jonah, have a great weekend. Thanks as always.
Thanks, fellas.
That is Jonah Carey, brought to you by International Champions Cup. Get ready for soccer's first tournament of the year on July 16th. Catch the International Champions Cup as AS Roma battles Chivas de Guadalajara right in their own backyard at SeatGeek Stadium. Get tickets at SeatGeek.com today. Brian Windhorst knows all about LeBron James. He has a new book out. He's going to tell us about it and also give us some insight into what's going on currently with the Lakers. He's coming up next on The Score. Bernstein and McKnight, Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. Looking forward to a conversation with Brian Windhorst about his book, LeBron Inc. It's a fascinating look at not just the basketball side of things, but the overall economic side of things in the NBA in general. It's just with the top players, the amount of money that's involved for the top players, provided they understand what they're doing.
Just how considered all the decisions are, too. Just it's not, they're not made in a vacuum. They're not shot from the hip. These are things that are worked over and workshopped, really. In the meanwhile, while we get Brian on the phone, the Cubs lineup is out for their contest against the Angels today. No Mike Trout in the Angels lineup. Which just sucks, because we told you should watch him. Albert Almora leads off in center. Chris Bryant at third. Anthony Rizzo at first, batting three. Javi Baez is at shortstop, batting four. Wilson Contreras is catching in the five spot. David Bodie's at second base. Mark Zagunas is in right. Kyle Schwarber gets a start against the left-handed Tyler Skaggs, so that's nice to see. And Cole Hamels has the start for the Cubs.
And I didn't know if this was a joke or not, but I assume it's not. There will be a video tribute for Tommy LaStella.
Okay.
Seriously?
He had some
I think the NBA
hits.
Ruined this. Everybody this year in the NBA is getting a video tribute. Doesn't matter who you are or how short of a time you played somewhere. So I think it's trickling over.
Yeah.
This is on the World Series team. That matters.
I know. But
Chris Bryant's a big fan. That matters.
A Tommy LaStella video tribute?
Sure.
He refused to go to Iowa. That should matter.
Cut to black. Tommy did not want to go to Iowa.
It wasn't even just because he was sent down. He didn't want to go to Iowa. I mean, just at all. He has a thing about not recognizing Iowa and won't set foot in the state.
I get that. I really do. I haven't excommunicated any states, but I have removed a planet from existence, at least in my own brain. I don't believe Jupiter, so I get where Tommy's coming from.
I don't know that you ever had at some point believed Jupiter that you...
There was some waffling back and forth, read some books in college, experimented some with other planets, and then kind of decided that, no, I do not believe Jupiter.
Yeah, there will never be a better video tribute than the one many, many years ago, the satirical video tribute that Robin Ventura had made for Mike Spanky LaValliere. Have you heard those stories?
No.
You haven't?
I haven't.
Okay.
I wish I had. I would have asked. I would have sat down and talked with Robin about this for a day.
Yeah, you were around the White Sox long enough, and apparently it's completely Ventura's doing. He commissioned a team of videographers do a sarcastic tribute Mike LaValliere, the rotund and diminutive catcher for the Pirates and the White Sox.
Ugh.
And it was set to Barbara Streisand singing "The Way We Were," and there were all kind. It was
when did he do this?
It was mid-90s.
Mid-90s, not late-90s?
No, I believe it was like 96 or 97, and it was all him.
That's just too bad.
It was an inspired idea. He's like, look, I am making this. I am doing this. And this is going to be all for Spanky.
I saw a picture of Robin just the other day. Ozzie Guillen on his Instagram had found Robin at a charity event they were both doing. He looks good. He's got the scruff going on. More than a 5 o'clock shadow, less than a beard, you know, kind of scraggly. Mm-hmm. Handsome, as always. Lighting up a room back and forth. I did enjoy, as much as it was kind of a thing in 16, I really enjoyed talking baseball with Robin Ventura. I learned a lot from the guy.
As long as it wasn't about the job he was doing actually managing the White Sox,
it wasn't.
Fine,
right? It was about the rest of baseball, and I learned a hell of a lot from that guy. I really did.
Yeah, nice guy. Just the fact that he's also able to walk and play golf without a tremendous amount of pain in that reconstructed leg.
Oh, yeah.
That is, if you really know what had to be done to just basically save that foot after that, I mean, that was... That's one thing. If you hope that you can keep putting off the next procedure after something that severe happens to you. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the Big Ten West champion Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Michigan State, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. I apologize for teasing Brian Windhorst's appearance, but we are not getting a response from him or his public relations guy who...
Mm.
arranged for
mayhaps this. Something's going on with the Lakers or something. I mean, they popped up with the Luke Walton stuff with the Kings had popped up earlier in this in the day.
Yeah, I
or
did.
Late last night, was it?
I did. I talked to an NBA friend who believes there are some power games being played right now between Luke Walton and the front office, having to do with his coaching staff, and saying, well, yeah, they're not necessarily firing him, but they are demanding some changes. There are apparently changes that Walton doesn't want to make, and the fact that he knows he could have the Kings job does give him a little bit of leverage in this situation where he knows they can't say, well, you're never going to work again in this town. I'm
right.
Working a town just up here.
Yeah, with a roster that's fairly decent and somewhat enjoyable to watch.
But you walk into work for Vlade Divac and Vivek Ranadive, which is no fun.
Which means you can
walk
away. By the way,
the Lakers having a lot of issues similar to the Bulls. It's all got to be in-house. Jeannie Buss had Jim Buss in charge, brought in Mitch Kupchak, who is from the family. And then it was Magic and Rob Pelinka, who was Kobe's agent from the family or extended family. And that's the big question now with Jeannie is she actually going to venture outside of what's known?
Yeah, stop hiring your friends and family.
Yeah, are you going after the best or are you just going to, you know, go after, okay, who else is in the Lakers family that I can rotate through?
I guess that hits at my biggest issue with the Bulls. It comes back to insularity. It comes back to this idea of, what do we know? How are we comfortable? What is in these hallways?
Yeah.
Who's part of our family?
Do you know the culture? You know, they seem to want to keep that steady.
But it doesn't exist in any positive way.
Are you talking about the Lakers or the Bulls?
The Bulls.
Yeah.
The Bulls. It's not a positive culture. It's a weird culture, and it's always lately with Paxson, everything is downbeat and finding enemies and lashing out and scowling, and people are out to get us, or people don't understand this, and this has been misinterpreted, and it's become this dark and twisted thing when it just could be so much lighter and easier and more nimble and smarter and flexible, and it just keeps doubling down upon itself.
It has made their successes kind of hard to celebrate. That kind of attitude and that kind of, well, I shouldn't say attitude, but that kind of response to some of the criticisms or response to some of the questions around them. I think the Otto Porter trade was a good one. I like that move. I like the fact that they recognized where they were or where they weren't in terms of the coming free agent period, and they went with Otto, who's going to make that team better. I think they got the best end of a Jimmy Butler trade. Could they have done it sooner? Yeah, absolutely. But those small successes, those small, you know, positive things are more difficult to celebrate or put into context when the rest of the context is, like you said, kind of dark and dour.
If you're just joining us, the show began with me really livid about the upcoming Jim Boylan extension because it just seems like a thing that they're doing that they don't have to do. There's no good, even if you want to do it, you don't have to do it now. You're doubling down on a coach that isn't any good, who doesn't do anything well, and then you say, this is the irony, well, we need a certain kind of player. What does it say about your coach if you need a certain kind of player? Well, you know, Doug Collins is here. He's been helping a lot. Well, what does that say about your coach? If so much of what you're doing, well, we need the right kind of player. We need Doug Collins to be involved. We need to completely redo the staff. Then maybe you don't have the right coach.
It's possible.
Then maybe if you're limiting your pool of possible players to a certain kind of guy who can take to a certain kind of style, if you know you're going to have somebody in the front office who has coached with a certain degree of success to be heavily involved, and you know you need to fill out your staff a certain way, maybe you've hired the wrong guy. And you say a certain kind of player. Well, what happened when Fred Hoiberg was here and said, we're going to get him a certain kind of player, and you say you're going to get younger and more athletic, and you get Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo.
And Denzel Valentine.
And say, this is going to be what younger and more athletic, and you do that. But now we need a certain kind of player to fit this guy.
They seem so desperate to set that edge, that, you know, fighting, hard-ass kind of competitive team. And they want to set the edge by sacrificing or seem willing to sacrifice just about anything else in order to just have the edge that Jim Boylan kind of comes with, that team comes with, and that the overall philosophy seems to demand. It's bizarre. It truly is. It's kind of bizarre.
It's unfortunate that we're at the point where we can't figure out how they think they're going to get closer to winning a title. Because this doesn't do it. There's nothing about a Jim Boylan extension that puts you closer to winning a championship. Nothing.
No, I mean, I even have questions about whether or not, even if you nailed the number one or number two pick, if you're bringing in Zion Williamson or Ja Morant or something, I don't have a whole lot of faith that Jim Boylan is the guy that takes that roster, which I imagine, you know, if you're getting one or two, and then you're picking up Patrick Beverley, if you've got Zion or not, whatever, if you're a playoff type team, I don't know that I trust Jim Boylan to be the developer of the talent that you've put together.
No, he wants to play mid-90s basketball or early-90s basketball. I don't.
As much as I
want to play modern basketball.
As much as I am kind of willing to move on from the little bit of mutiny that got started in the first 10 days and his apparent foresight. I mean, he knew that was coming. I knew that was going to happen. It's fine. We're all set here. I knew that was coming. We designed it to be that way. Okay, I can look past that as a very rocky start to your tenure. Fine. But I can't really look past the chucking in into Lauri Markkanen and underneath the block and making him play that way when that's not his best use. I mean, very clearly, it's not his best use, and that's the way you wanted to work the offense for the better part of 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm not as in on the Dave Yeager being fired and possibly being a coach of the year this year of just saying, hey, just go get that guy, because he also wants to play slow it down. Now, maybe a like more modern version than the Boylan version, but the more true Dave Yeager was when he was grit and grind coaching Memphis with Gasol and Randolph and Conley and Tony Allen and those guys.
He's a better, smarter coach than Jim Boylan.
Yes, okay. But if you're going to commit to, if that's going to require a 4 or 5 year commitment, considering the Bulls don't want to buy out coaches ahead of time, is it, you know, do you want to go to that guy this second? And then you've got a similar type of thing where his biggest problem is personality within the building with getting along with everybody. And boy, that sounds very familiar too.
And it's important you bring that up, Rick, because I know people who respect Dave Yeager as a coach, but don't like him very much. If that makes sense. He obviously can do something. He's edgy.
He's got to deal with Dave Yeager when you're dealing with Dave Yeager.
Right. It's not quite
Tibbsy light.
He's not quite as pathological as Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, he's watered down.
He's a little more personable. I mean, Thibodeau really had some issues when it came to interpersonal dealings. I mean, really some problems.
Yeah, I mean, they were fairly well documented here.
Yeah, Yeager isn't quite at that level, but there's some people say, yeah, the guy knows what he's doing, but it's just after a while you get tired of the whole act.
Back to the Cubs game real quick. We saw this text from the 630. We gave you the lineup, and apparently there is a video tribute for Tommy La Stella. This is the text. Tommy La Stella was a likable fan favorite by most fans. Shows you don't necessarily have to be only an MVP or Cy Young winner to be recognized by your former team. What's wrong with the average player being recognized? Here's the other thing, though.
You're pushing back on that?
I covered that team in 15 as they made their run and then they got steamrolled by the Mets. Am I remembering it wrong that when Joe filled out the lineup and had Tommy La Stella starting the wild card game against the Pirates, didn't everyone lose their damn mind? Mm-hmm. Wasn't everyone, there was like this residual anger toward not just Joe, but also Tommy La Stella for his being in that starting lineup.
I guarantee you the same
Did that go away?
The same guy that sent that text just now is the same guy that would fire off some reflexive, why does everybody get a participation ribbon these days? That same guy.
Yeah, it smells
promise
a little
you
bit like that.
Promise you that.
You don't have to be an MVP or Cy Young guy to get the video tribute. You can be Tommy La Stella and get a video tribute. I just think it's worth asking, what are we going to put in the video tribute?
Right. What is
what
in
hits
the video?
Are you putting? I mean, there are hits. A couple of hits to put in the video tribute. But which ones?
This segment's brought to you by Lakeside Bank. Good treasury management is good business, but there's a secret. At many banks, it's cookie cutter and costly. At Lakeside Bank, they custom design programs for each client and save them money. Call Lakeside Bank. Learn the secret to real treasury management. Lakeside Bank, it's about time. Phil is on the north side and is on the score. Hi, Phil.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Fine.
Well,
I am. It's crazy that they're going to let this buffoon run this team. You're in the most important stages for Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine. You might get lucky and get a really good pick. How can you trust this guy to do anything to help these guys? X's and O's on the court. It's just, it's a sham. The whole thing just smells. I don't understand it. It's so frustrating because I want to like them and I want them to do well, but there's two strikes before they even start. It's crazy. I don't get it. It's such an important part of the growth of, you know, the kid from Duke that, you know, was lost after 40 some games.
Wendell Carter
Jr. How are you going to build this team with this guy running it? It is so Bulls with Pax and Gar. It's just frustrating. I want to watch, but every time I watch, I get angry. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Phil. I totally get it.
I like the idea of every time you want to watch, you get angry. It's not even while you're watching. It's just during the want to. Like during the afternoon, they've got a game against the Lakers, and you're like, I want to watch. I don't, God. Angry again because I wanted to watch something.
Yeah, and then you listen to the stuff he says after the game where it doesn't even make sense, and people ask questions, and he avoids responding about why he takes a timeout, why he doesn't advance the ball, why there's a certain guy he should have had in the game, but he doesn't have him in the game. I mean, simple questions from reporters post-game, and there's never a way to explain some of what he does that makes no sense.
Okay, hear me out on this. Could they put, like, the chart of when he should take a timeout across the chest so that he'd be sure to see it?
Ooh, now like that's the kind of thinking
chest?
We need.
Someone else's chest?
Maybe the trainer's chest?
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Maybe like the lead assistant, so that way he can just be like, okay, look at me, and just like turn the other way in his chair and just look at him, and it's on his shirt.
So there's the timing matrix is right there to let him know.
Yeah.
You take the timeout here, you can advance the ball then and run a completely different set of plays.
Or they just use the guy's shirt as a like, just to keep track of timeouts. Just like, okay, there was this many.
Just like dry erase board
on his shirt.
Yes. Or like the put on chalkboard that you can do.
Yeah, I think this is like a sandwich sign. You just kind of do that. I think this is how we. Yeah, this is how we manage Jim Boylan.
It's just incredible. So well, we've retained Jim Boylan, but also we're going to have to do a whole bunch of other stuff to protect our team from him.
Found a way for Randy Brown to be useful.
We can only have a certain kind of player. We're going to have a lot of active work in the front office to make sure we're telling him exactly what to do. So
and when we need a timeout, we'll flash something on the Jumbotron so that all 22,000 can scream, "Take a timeout!"
It's like
now.
Telling Forrest Gump to stop.
And his staff is going to have to be really, really smart and really, really experience, but we like him. We think he's really good. This is what happens when you sit on the plane next to the owner and you make the owner feel really good about everything you know, then boy, the good things can happen for you.
Good work if you can get it. Transition with Lawrence is on the way. Before we get out of here, a little bit of Mike Trout news as the Angels are in town to play the Cubs as well. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Oh, God, I love you. I'm crying. Goodbye.
It is a bright, sunshiny Friday as we get ready for a weekend of chilly, possibly rainy baseball. And Mike Trout didn't make the trip. Is that right? As we welcome in Lawrence Holmes.
Yeah, apparently he stayed behind. He is in L.A. The team hopes maybe he'll join the team over the weekend, but he's staying behind to get an MRI on the hamstring.
Hamstring or groin?
It was a hamstring.
I thought it was tweaked groin.
Well, maybe
I
read
that. Groin too.
Definitely read plain and not coming with the team. Oh, yeah, my bad. It's a groin. It's a groin.
That sucks.
Still not here.
Yeah, man.
Hamstring or groin, the man's not here.
Like, that's the guy that you want to go see.
Yep.
That's one of, I think, how many guys in baseball would you pay to go see? Because Trout's on my list.
It's, yeah. I mean,
is that the
players?
List? Well, is that the list?
Asking me is not fair because the bar is fair. Like, I'd go see Chris Paddock.
He'd go
right
see
now.
Whit Merrifield, this guy.
Well, and I mean, right now, there's a reason to pay to go see Whit Merrifield.
Yep.
Made up player, by the way.
Let's get the hit.
Danny Vogelbach is a guy you paid to go.
No.
Tim Anderson.
Well, right now.
517.
Tim Anderson.
I'd go watch
pretty
him play.
Well.
This, for me, this is probably a list of 20 to 25 players that I'd actually go see.
All right, well, you're the outlier.
I
Dan,
absolutely
what about
am.
You?
Admittedly, yes.
Trout, Scherzer, DeGrom.
Boy, Acuna's really fun.
Yeah, see?
You know, Lindor, when he...
Lindor, healthy Lindor.
Lindor is fun.
Javi Baez.
But just entertaining players.
You don't want to go see Bryce Harper right now? Because you go see Bryce, you get to see
okay,
the rest of that
you know
team,
what?
Too.
All right, I guess my list is starting to get as fat as Connor's. Then, yeah, I put Bryce Harper on the list. Is it weird that I would pay money to see Paul Goldschmidt hit?
No, that's not weird.
Go see and pay to see, or get free tickets to go see this. There's all sorts of different things we could add to this menu.
Then I'll distill it down. I give you the chance to go see a minimum of two players with allotted baseball cash that can only be used for you to use baseball cash
baseball
to
bucks.
See baseball. Yes, baseball bucks. Which players are going to get your baseball bucks?
Mike Trout, absolutely. A healthy Mike Trout gets my baseball bucks right damn now.
Is there anyone else worthy of your baseball bucks? Get your baseball bucks
in!
Yeah?
Given night, you know, it's hard in baseball. It's not like a basketball game. It's not like, you know, the guy's going to show up and have a usage rate, you know?
But that's why, like, I say a guy like Scherzer, for example.
Right. You want to see starters.
You're going to see him a lot.
Shortstops, guys who you know who are going to, like, if you're going to go the defensive side of things, you might not want to go see a great center fielder defense. Like, if you want to go see Ramon Laureano, that's great, but he may not get a ball hit to him. Shortstops, you're more likely to see that happen. Like Javi Baez, I'm sure for a lot of people.
Javi Baez is high on my list.
Is a player that you'd want to go spend baseball bucks on.
Because
for us, it might not be the same thing because you see him every day.
Well, the thing about Javi, though, is he gives you fun on both sides.
No doubt.
You're going to have fun watching him play, actually multiple sides. You're going to have fun watching him play defense. Mm-hmm. You're going to have fun watching him hit. And if he gets on base, you're going to have fun watching him run the bases.
Yeah, and I always say to people, if you are indeed doing something like that, real truth, if you are buying a ticket to go see someone, get there as early as you possibly can. Because some of the stuff when you know you're going to watch somebody is in warm-ups. And when you see somebody doing something quirky, or you see, like when I used to watch George Brett take batting practice, and if I'm going to a White Sox game, I would get there as early, when the doors open, when the Royals were in town, to watch the way he approached BP. And I've told the story to George Brett of when interleague play was getting going, and I was covering Cubs Royals, and he was 43, 45, something like that, relatively recently
Carlos
retired.
Lee.
And he showed up. The wind was howling out at 25 miles an hour, and he made sure that he took batting practice before the game so he could say he hit in Wrigley Field with the wind blowing out, and I was the only person there.
Well, that's pretty great. He's one of my favorite players, too.
Yeah. Get there early. If you're going to see Mike Trout, if you're going in the day to see Ichiro, half the fun of going to see Ichiro was watching his process.
Yeah, I actually think just being in a ballpark early is better for you than coming in with the horde. Like being able to take in, it's one of the things that we probably take for granted because of our access.
No question.
But being there and seeing how the ballpark becomes this living entity night in and night out, I think is really cool. I'm a big proponent of, I love empty ballparks. I love empty football stadiums and just seeing how they kind of come to life. It's a romantic way of looking at sports, but I always am flabbergasted by how many people don't come in as soon as the gates come, because then you're going to be able to hear things that you're not going to be able to hear once the crowd comes in.
It's funny, though, that you use the term spoiled, and then for any of us who worked in minor league baseball to know, like, you're there and the sun is barely up and you've got a bucket and a rag. And
well, that's a different experience.
And that's awesome.
And even though you are broadcasting that night's game, you have seats to wipe down. You have benches. There is a bucket of dirt you then have to take out to back because there's something wrong with the mound in the bullpen, and the guy needs you to bring him his dirt.
Well, and in Connor's case, Connor had that sunroom that he had to be in for a Sox day
White
game.
Sox pre-game. Oh God!
And I mean,
I burned myself.
Of course you did.
You burn yourself.
The sun is directly there. You've got the glass magnifying it. It's horrible.
It's a rough one.
Booth 6 can be real hot.
It gets very warm. You also have to remind yourself when you're there at the White Sox and maybe you're there after a game and it's gone really late and everyone has gone home, you can lock yourself in that stairwell just trying to get out to your car.
It's true.
Yeah, it takes a long time to get out.
Hello?
Please.
I'm Connor McKnight.
Someone. Oh, that. No, they ran away for that. No, I was just. It was lucky because someone had been one of the paramedics who had stayed, had just been walking by, you know, where the happened to hear it, opened up the door, and I got out. Took 45 minutes. I was locking that stairwell for 45 minutes.
Why didn't you go all the way down?
I did.
Wow. I'm shocked by that.
All those doors
were
locked.
Don't you remember the story when it happened at the United Center where Tyler Hansborough walked into the wrong doorway? I got like locked in a closet at United Center and was completely freaked out.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, and then it turns out like he
just like
and his brother and Ben Hansborough too. Like they both have some weird claustrophobia thing going on.
It's not weird. I mean, people have that stuff.
Yeah, I know. Maybe because as homeschooled children, there are some odd punishments going on or something. I can only imagine what would psychologically cause some of these things to
odd
people.
You just want them to have like a broken childhood, don't you? Like your world makes more sense if the Hansboroughs grew up with like real weird punishments.
I've got an off-air story for you about that.
The Hansboroughs?
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Is it exactly what we think?
Completely off-air. Completely. You can never make mention of it ever.
I promise.
Ever.
I'm good about that.
And if I hear it,
I'm telling you, you'll know where it came from.
And I'm going to deny that I said anything about it.
You're trusting Dan with that?
Yeah, you know what, Campy?
Oh, you don't know that.
You're 100% right.
The show on Monday.
I should not tell Dan because Dan will immediately make it a thing on Monday.
Oh, look, if I get the diagnosis tomorrow and that it's all ending. Oh,
well, that's all different.
That'll be a show you don't want to miss.
So wait, is the colonoscopy tomorrow?
No, I haven't scheduled it yet.
Okay.
But I'm saying if, in fact, it's like, you know, Terry always said if somebody told him he had like a year to live, all he would do the rest of the time is smoke.
Yeah. I mean.
Which is the most Terry thing.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.